So we're back on the matter of docket number FIC 2020-0082, William Bailey versus Chief Police Department, City of Bridgeport, Rhode Island. We've all had an opportunity to review the records. I would like to make a motion, but I'm going to ask Attorney Herman to assist me with that.
So,
please.
Sure, Mr. Chairman. So the chairman would like to amend paragraph 77, and he would like to amend with regard to the first record. I'm just going to refer to the in-camera records by the last number, so it would be the number before the B. So we would like
paragraph 77?
Paragraph 77,
so, no,
Commissioner for Session, yes. So the first record, which ends in 4-B, that would be the first document listed, he would like to amend in the parenthetical, instead of line 1 to 23, he would like it to say lines 1 through 20. And then moving down to record 123 in that same paragraph, where the parenthetical says lines 1 to 22, he would like to amend that to be lines 1 to 19. And that would require amending paragraph 76, which is a paragraph that finds certain records are erased, and I would be adding in with regard to the in-camera record number 4, that lines 21 through 23 of that record are erased, and that with regard to document 123, lines 20 through 22 are erased. So in taking those three lines out of paragraph 77, we add those three lines into paragraph 76. That would be the chairman's motion.
I'll second the motion.
And then
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
This is a naive question. So we've reviewed this in camera. So the members of the commission, we know what we're talking about here. How are they going to know what we just did?
They won't? Well, the respondents will know, but the complainants, the intervener does not have access to that. I mean, that's the state of affairs currently anyway.
I mean, I think that might be a question for Attorney Scalo.
I mean, this is Commissioner Hankins. Isn't that, they're sort of exempt or not exempt, except for what Attorney Scalo can tell the intervener. Would that be fair to say?
No, I think the question through the chair, I think, is perhaps asking if the intervener has access to the in-camera records that pertain to his position.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if the chair would want to pose that question.
Does your client counsel have access to his personnel file and the records in the personnel file?
No.
He does not?
No.
Okay. I don't know how to...
Well, many times people don't have access. I mean, the complainant also, the requester doesn't have access either. But they're in the possession of the respondents.
Well, it doesn't seem really fair. I mean, if somebody wanted to take an appeal or just know what happened here, at least the parties and the intervener, shouldn't there be a way where they can at least learn what we did here?
There may be a way, but I don't think that's really for us to counsel.
Okay. All right. It was a naive question. I'm sorry. Okay.
And so we're in the discussion phase of this. I just wanted to state that I think the record that I've asked to have erased relates to a witness's review of a record. I believe that it should be erased. It's not simply based on a witness's memory, but a witness's review of a police record that has been erased. So.
May I be here, Commissioner?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby, so having looked at the records without divulging the contents of the record, I don't believe I agree, just based on my understanding and Attorney Harmon's argument about what would be considered an erased record. So the contents currently under paragraph 77, I believe, and this would be a question to you, Attorney Harmon, for the record, all of the records that are indicated currently as not erased under paragraph 77, you would say are not erased because it was a record created from a memory and not a record created from a record that was erased?
That was what I thought with regard to the records in 77, that they either on their face were not erased or they were created off of a memory. So, but I respect the commission's position with regard to any changes they want to see made here.
Understood. Yeah, and I can see where that's why I think it probably took us a while to look at it. That's just my personal perspective after reviewing it and listening to. I respect the chairman's position. I just disagree.
I just agree with the chairman's position of those three lines. I mean, I did look at them and I did discuss them with commission counsel about that. And to me, it's kind of like a fruit of a poisonous tree, for lack of a better phrase, those three lines. But other than that, it was, it's an excellent job anyway, but with the excision of those three lines, to exempt those three lines, I think that, that would be the best fit for everything.
Any further discussion?
Thank you.
Do we have any? I guess we'll vote on the amendment. If there's no further discussion, I'll take a roll call vote on the amendment. Those in favor of the amendment, Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Buzashi?
Yes.
Mr. Goldsby?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, I'm an even yes. The amendment, the third amendment, passes. Yes. Do the commissioners have any questions of the parties that are here? Or any further questions about the decision as a whole, which has been amended three times? You wish to say anything, counsel? Anything further?
No, I agree with Attorney Einhorn's comments that it would be nice to know.
Right.
What are in the records that are going to be disclosed before making a decision whether to appeal or not. So I guess I'll discuss that with Attorney Scalo and whether we could come up with a way of keeping them private for now, but allowing at least the person who's subject to the records to review.
I understand.
Yeah,
it's a very difficult position to be in. I wonder if you can get a copy of his personnel file, and that's something to ask Attorney Scalo. In any event,
the State Personnel Act, I don't believe, applies to the public sector. So,
any
have to ask for information.
Any further discussion, questions? All right. I'll take a roll call. We need a motion. Yeah.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Streeter, I move adoption of the amended hearing officer's report.
Mr. Hankins, second.
Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of the amended hearing officer's report. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzashi?
Yes.
Mr. Colesby?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Chairman Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for your patience.
Thank you.
And thank you, Attorney Herman. Excellent job.
Thank
very very
you.
Difficult job.
Thank you, all. That was a great job. Okay.
Next is docket number FIC 2021-0130. Rachel De Leon versus Chief Police Department, Town of Greenwich et al.
Now we got the CD correct.
Yes.
Is there anyone here? Is Rachel De Leon here? Is anyone here on her behalf? All right. So, Attorney Wadler, just
thank
identify
you.
Yourself for the record, and you have the floor.
Yes. Please excuse my voice.
Sure.
Abby Wadler, Assistant Town Attorney for the Town of Greenwich, representing the respondents.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, Chair. I'd like to address just part of the decision. There are three reports in the decision, as you know. The second report was found not to be exempt under, Section 1-210, B3H, which is read in conjunction with 1-216, which has to do with the issue of uncorroborated allegations. This case, which is from 2009, pertains to an alleged sexual assault of a statutory nature involving at least two teenagers. Of the evidence collected, there were varying amount of confirmation. There was a DNA of the alleged victim, which was not found to be on any of the material evidence. There was also contradictory statements by the minor alleged victim. Ultimately, the assistant district attorney did not proceed with the case because the alleged victim would not testify. In this case, the victim's mother allowed her to decide, but the father forbade her testimony. The lack of testimony left the allegations uncorroborated in the view of the Greenwich police, and the case did not proceed. The respondent's position is that the second report, that second report is exempt under 1-210B3H. The alleged perpetrator, who was 18 at the time, has not been able to defend himself. This happened a long time ago, and the police contend that there's a public interest in not disclosing his identity at this time and under these circumstances. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to address them.
Anyone have any questions? Are you proposing anything at this point?
I'm proposing that all three reports, which were submitted for in-camera inspection, be found to be exempt.
Jerry Harmon, could you articulate why this report of the three should
sure. So, Attorney Harmon, I was the hearing officer in this case. So there are three investigative reports. Number one, I found was uncorroborated and therefore exempt. Number two, I found was not uncorroborated, and I had those two investigations in camera. Number three, I did not have in camera, but I credited the affidavit that I received. If you see in paragraph 41, I found that the information in the affidavit was sufficient to find that the third case report was nullied and that more than 13 months had passed. So I didn't ask for it to be given to me in camera. With regard to the second report, no, I can't say anything about what the records say, but I would just say that a state's attorney's decision not to prosecute is not equivalent to a record being corroborated or not corroborated. The definition that the commission uses to find that a record is corroborated is whether there's something to add weight or credibility to the underlying allegations. I did find that the report for number two was uncorroborated, and then I had issued a recommendation to this commission, and Attorney Wadler informed me that she found more in-camera records that actually pertain to that second report. So I pulled that report off your commission meeting agenda, and I added those records into the analysis, which the second report was originally 47 pages. And then on March 14th, 2023, they gave me an additional
for pages 48 through 195. So a really big, big chunk of that record that I had found was not not uncorroborated. More records came in. I looked at those records really carefully, and I did find in paragraph 35 that there were identities of minor witnesses in those records, and that two particular records concerned minors in different regards. And I recommended that the commission allow the respondents to take out those records. But I do feel that, you know, when you have an uncorroborated record and you have a corroborated record, it's pretty easy to see the difference. And I had both. So I stand by the order, and I'm glad to answer any questions.
Can I just ask a follow-up one question?
Yes,
can you just help me clarify for me paragraph 35? I'm just trying to understand. So under this order, there is no identifying information about minors, either medical information, names, or anything else being released. Is that
anything
correct?
That could relate back to those minors?
Back 10 years
right,
ago, 15
right,
years ago,
right.
Whenever there were minors there. Now.
And then I recommended that we find record 125 through 127 completely exempt.
Yes.
And 128 completely exempt. It's just not the kind of stuff that would be released. So it pertains to minors, but the actual underlying criminal allegations in the report number two, I do not believe that they are uncorroborated.
Do any of the commissioners have any other questions? I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I'll move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hackett, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Goldsby?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, all in the yes. Passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Nice to see you, Chair.
FIC 2022-0266, Patty Gordon versus Corporation Counsel, Office of the Corporation Counsel, Town of West Hartford, et al. Will the parties please identify themselves, starting with you, Gordon?
Patty Gordon, complaining.
Good afternoon, James Healy. I'm counsel for the respondents.
Thank you. So, Ms. Lord, I'd like to begin.
Ma'am, you have to forgive me. I'm sick with nerves. So, I'd like to start with good evening, Ms. Lorden. The Board of Education is in receipt of your multiple FOIA requests. This is not a denial of your requests. The school district is in the process of compiling the records you have requested, and it will provide them to you promptly. I would ask, however, that you please be respectful to staff. Bear in mind that the Board of Education and its employees must appropriately prioritize your requests with their educational obligations and responsibilities. Please also be aware that the Connecticut Freedom of Information Act permits public agencies to petition for relief from vexatious requesters who abuse the right to information or interfere with the operation of the agency. While I hope it does not become necessary for the town to take this step, your multiple harassing requests may eventually obligate us to pursue this option. Finally, the FOIA does not regard public agencies to create documents or generate reports that do not already exist, nor does it obligate the public employee to meet or report to any requester. Regards, Dallas C. Dodge, Corporation Council, Town of West Hartford. This letter was sent to me attached to an email from Julio Duarte, who has been mistakenly titled as a senior school administrator. He is, in fact, the director for human resources for the town of West Hartford and for West Hartford Public Schools. I had sent requests for information under the FOIA Act to Mr. Dodge, to Attorney Dodge, 2 days prior to this email. And this was his response. No records were presented by the respondent, Attorney Dodge, with regard to those requests at all. This was the only response I got from him. So on June 20th, I filed my complaint with the FOIA Commission. I subsequently had to resubmit the requests, and I did so on August 4th. The fact is that there are errors and deficiencies, not just with the hearing officer's report, but also with Attorney Healy's brief that was submitted. I did not submit a brief because I thought I did not consider the matter closed at the final hearing. There were three hearings starting in November 14th of 2022. I did, in fact, reach out to Attorney Latour, who, it should be noted, played a dual role in this proceedings. At the November 14th hearing, she appeared as legal counsel for Attorney Dodge. And then subsequently, Attorney Healy was hired, and she became a witness at the last hearing, which is contrary to the rules of conduct, the professional conduct, I believe, that Attorney Latour could not, she could not be in both roles as legal counsel and then bear witness at a hearing for the same proceedings. So that was one error that occurred. Now, when I received this, again, you'll have to forgive me, I'm not a legal mind. I have tried my best to stay within the color of the law. But when I received that email, I viewed it as an intimidation to cease from filing requests for public records, which I am entitled to. It was a clear threat to me, and I was unclear as to the terminology, and so I did consult a friend of mine who has been in America a lot longer than I have, and I was correct, vexatious, that you are, you know, in, you are purposely being vexatious in these requests. Now, Attorney Healy has used the same terminology in his brief, calling me a serial requester and frivolous. He goes so far as to say that the statute empowers frivolously without, he states, frivolously without reasonable grounds solely for the purpose of harassing the agency. And then he says the respondents are not asking the commission to do so here. Well, yes, you are, because you're then asking to reserve the right, all rights in connection with future FOIA requests or appeals related to this complainant. The threat is still there, that if I make any more requests, that vexatious requester can be invoked. It should be noted that I also have a pending hearing with the commission regarding finances with the town of West Hartford, primarily to do with WHPS. So for me, this means that Attorney Healy is threatening me in future requests. And then I believe the dual, what I'm trying to, sorry, I'm a little all over the place. With regard to Attorney Latour, it is actually the Code of Professional Conduct, I believe, Rule 3.7, where an attorney cannot be in both roles. So I hope I made that clear. The fact finding, it did not meet the burden of persuasion here. And in actual fact, for Attorney Dodge or Attorney Healy to, now it should be noted that in the three hearings, no evidence was put forward as to me being a vexatious requester. None at all was put forward, just the terminology and the words and the character. And I would say that Attorney Healy's statements
there's a question of attorney-client privilege, because Attorney Dodge did not actually testify at any of these hearings, and he was the respondent, and he would be the custodian of the records. You know, and in his brief, Attorney Healy says, if anything, Attorney Dodge's June 8th response clarified that he was acknowledging requests specifically directed to school-related documents. I didn't ask for school documents. So that's actually completely wrong. And then when Attorney Healy associates a vexatious requester, well, under the definition of PRVR, and in the final decisions that I have looked into, and indeed I was here for one of those, you have to be a frequent FOIA requester. He states that in page 2. And he says, it is truly frustrating that the complainant would seek to exploit the fact that she has foisted so many FOIA requests upon the town. Again, using that terminology, using those words that I, implying that I am a vexatious requester, and goes so far as to say on page 12, a serial requester. Again, no evidence has been put forward in any of the hearings to prove that I am a vexatious requester, a serial requester, or a frivolous one. It should be noted that my complaint was June 20th of 2022. That is a year almost of my life. This is not frivolous. I would not spend a year of my life just on frivolity. Now, maybe I'm misinterpreting the meaning of the word. I am a layperson. I am a per se complainant. So my meanings for words might be different. And he also, Attorney Healy also quotes Smith, where he says that the complainant declined to follow up with Attorney Latour, even after Attorney Latour reached out to her directly about June 6th request. That is inaccurate also. It was not Attorney Latour who reached out to me. I reached out to Attorney Latour, and it is part of the administrative record, my email, asking Attorney Latour about the June 6th requests. So these threats are continuously being made. These allegations of me being a vexatious requester are being made. And yet the burden of persuasion, I believe, is on the respondent side, not the complainant side. And Attorney Healy states, the statute does not require an agency to provide granular detail when acknowledging a request. Now, to me, it seems that Attorney Healy expects the burden of persuasion to be on me, the complainant, rather than on the respondent. And the only documents that were submitted were emails and the testimony submitted by the IT department, the head of the IT department, which is part of the administrative record, shows that only emails, mail, were looked for. I asked for emails, memos, notes, everything, written and digital. So even in Attorney McGee's final proposal, she has limited it to digital. I wasn't asking solely for digital, and I was not asking solely for emails. So the hearing officer also does not mention that Attorney Cynthia Latour acted in a dual role, not just as an advocate, lawyer, legal counsel at the beginning of the proceedings, but also at the end of the proceedings as a witness. And a lot of the hearing officer's dismissal of the case is based on the testimony of Attorney Cynthia Latour in her role as witness in the last hearing. So as far as I, like I said, as far as I, my understanding is it violates the rule 3.7 and really, could somebody else have testified to the full disclosure of the records? They could, but it would have to be Attorney Dallas Dodge because he is the respondent
and he never presented anything in terms of records. So the affidavit and the testimony of Cynthia Mature, attorney Cynthia Mature, it's tainted and it's prejudicial because she has a vested interest in the outcome of the hearing. She has a vested interest in making sure that it's dismissed. And it wasn't impartial, and there was, under the law, there wasn't a sense of fairness. And the hearing officer's report and recommendation is, it's prejudicial and partial, and with that regard, and I think it's an abuse of discretion to have left that out completely. I think, for me, it's prejudicial against me. And the relevant custodian for the records that I was seeking would essentially be attorney Dallas Dodge. He was the respondent. The search was limited only to email. The two witnesses who were presented from the IT department stated that they only searched for emails. Attorney Latour gave testimony that she was only giving testimony based on her personal knowledge of the habits of Attorney Dallas Dodge with regard to communication. Now, I have witnessed Attorney Dallas Dodge and other members of the Corporation Council using their phones texting during public meetings. So there is also a piece of evidence that was entered into the administrative record, which is an email between Attorney Dallas Dodge and then Superintendent Tom Moore for WHPS, that he would call him. It is my position that if there is a possibility that there are other records beyond email, beyond digital, as I requested in my original requests. And the only person who could provide those records or testify to the lack of records or the existence of them is the respondent, attorney Dallas Dodge.
Ms. Thornton, you've gone...
I'm sorry.
Well over the 10 minutes.
I'm sorry.
So can you try to wrap up for us?
That's it. I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you. Attorney Healy.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. I'm here today on behalf of the respondents. We fully support the hearing officer's proposed decision. This appeal should be dismissed. You've heard a lot from the complainant about whether she is or is not a vexatious requester. I need to note there has been no request as part of these proceedings to make any such finding about whether or not she's a vexatious requester. This is about the complainant's appeal. She has filed requests for documents, and she has received all responsive documents. That's what this case is about. That's what the hearing officer conducted several days of evidence and has a detailed record to confirm that. These respondents did not violate any FOI laws. They undertook significant efforts to provide records to an individual who, she admitted at the hearing, has pursued at least 25 requests in a 9-month period. The hearing officer correctly notes that even the absence of a 4-day acknowledgement would not be a violation of the statute. Nonetheless, we proved that the respondents did acknowledge the complainant's pending requests in a timely fashion. And even though the complainant never pointed to a single shred of evidence and has not today that would support her allegation that the document production was in any way insufficient, the town provided a detailed record before the hearing officer to show that these respondents acted appropriately. They were forced to retain counsel because of the allegations the complainant pressed against the in-house municipal attorneys. These respondents then produced multiple town witnesses, employees who explained in very specific detail how they undertook and completed a fulsome search for documents. That's the record in this case. In doing so, I would submit the town has proven the negative. They have proven that the complainant did receive all records responsive to her request. There is no evidence and no basis to say otherwise. We heard a lot from the complainant here today about matters related to other accusations against Corporation Counsel. I'd note two things. One is that is far outside this commission's jurisdiction. Nonetheless, I want to assure this commission that the allegation of harassment or likewise from Corporation Counsel is not true. It's based on a single email that is in the record that the complainant read. Corporation Counsel explained that our FOI laws do not compel a school administrator to convene an in-person meeting with the complainant. And the town council, Corporation Counsel also simply noted that the town reserves its rights under the vexatious request or provisions of the FOI statute. In my brief, the portion that the complainant read here today is my reference to the statute and my statement that at this time the town is not asking for any such finding. That is not before the commission. The commission is not being asked to make any such finding at this time. In our view, the hearing officer's recommended ruling explains that the allegations the complainant has made are not without merit, and we'd ask that this appeal be dismissed. If the commission has questions, I'm of course happy to answer.
Is Commissioner Hankins?
Commissioner Hankins.
Yeah, thank you. Attorney Healy, you noted in your oral argument just now and your brief, and also the hearing officer noted in paragraphs 9 and 14 of her report that all responsive records have been produced, and that's a finding, and I take it you would agree with that finding.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely correct.
And you know, one thing I would note also that, you know, when I was a municipal attorney, we would run into situations where one of us in the office would have to testify. And given the rules of conduct, we would have to hire outside counsel because we could not be a witness. Nobody in our office could be if one of us was going to be a witness, nobody could question them. And so, you know, I understand that the respondents were being circumspect by not having a member of their firm testify. Would that be also fair to say?
Yes, Commissioner. You know, obviously, when the allegations that were the Attorney Latour came to the first hearing in this matter, not believing that there was a challenge to the sufficiency of the production of documents. The belief was only about the 4-day acknowledgement period. The record is clear as to what transpired that day. The hearing officer was of the view that the complainant's allegations were broader than that and that some evidence should be taken on the sufficiency of those records. That's when the town, for the reasons that the commissioner just stated, believed that the prudent course in full compliance with all ethical rules was to retain outside counsel to handle those proceedings. That is, in fact, what happened. And I'd submit that's further support for the hearing officers.
Just my last thing before I say too much, you know, the words vexatious and requester, and maybe vexatious requester were used, but the statutes provide for a separate proceeding, an entirely separate proceeding of vexatious requester status to be adjudged that or not. And that's where the municipality is, in fact, the complainant. And from what I can understand, nothing was initiated in that regard, correct?
The town has not made that request at this time, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chairman, it seems like a very well-reasoned hearing officer's report. I mean, it's pretty laid out in finding of facts 13, 14, and 15. I think that it really covers the fact that, as was just mentioned by counsel and Commissioner Hankins, that the request was fulfilled. So I'd be in favor of this hearing officer's report for adoption.
Thank you. Any further comments, questions?
No.
Did you wish to say anything else, ma'am?
No.
Counsel?
No, thank you.
Okay. Can I entertain a motion?
Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fusashi?
Yes.
Mr. Goldsby?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, all in 8 and yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you all. Thank you both.
Drive safely. It's, it looks so good.
Yeah. It's scary out there.
It's the same thing. It's like a tree to protect the world.
last is docket number FIC 2022-0404, Kirk Carr, John Noonan, and John Tartaglia versus Chair, Richfield Economic and Community Development Commission, Town of Richfield. Please identify themselves, starting with you, sir.
Kirk Carr, complainant. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Jason Buxbaum, town attorney on behalf of the respondents.
Mr. Carr, would you like to begin?
Yes, thank you. I have a memo to read. This is regarding Kirk Carr, John Noonan, and John Tartaglia's complaint against the chair of the Richfield Economic and Community Development Commission, FIC 2002-0404. Hearing officer's report in this matter was very thorough and generally complete. I'm very grateful to her and to the commission for the time and resources devoted to this complaint. There is one correction and one addition to the record that should be entered into the record for the commission's additional consideration. This is, first of all, regarding items 6, 16 and 17, where the report refers to our application as being a special permit application. And that's understandable because the chairman of the Planning and Zoning Commission referred it to such, as such, in referral letters, but it was not a special permit application. It was an amendment application. So it was an application to amend the zoning regulations. What the report of the hearing officer omits is that at the August 16th planning and zoning meeting, at which the respondent, Ms. Norwood, read the statement on behalf of the Economic and Community Development Commission, the legality of the meeting was challenged by the complainant, yours truly, and questioned its proper posting and therefore legality of the ECDC meeting and the statement. The respondent vehemently assured the Planning and Zoning Commission that the ECDC meeting had been properly posted with the town clerk and it was a legal meeting and the resulting statement was valid. While the respondent has acknowledged the error to the ECDC, the respondent has not acknowledged the posting error to the Planning and Zoning Commission. To the complaint, to my knowledge, she has never corrected the record to the Planning and Zoning Commission as to the accuracy of vehement assurances that the P&Z, to the P&Z, that the ECDC meeting on the morning of August 16th was legal. Video of the respondent's appearance at PZC meeting and her statements vouching for the legality of the illegal meeting were provided to the hearing officer and to the respondent on USB drives at the hearing for review. Perhaps the hearing officer can report on her review of that video. Thank you.
Counsel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. I'm here on behalf of the respondents. We're here today seeking adoption of the hearing officer's report. I'll just respond to a couple of the statements from Mr. Carr. As to paragraph 6, how the application is characterized in the report, I'm not sure that's consequential. We would have no objection. I'm not sure there's anything in the record that would indicate one way or the other what it was called. As to the last statement, I think that's likely beyond the commission's jurisdiction as to what was said at a Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. The record before the hearing officer was clear that this municipal volunteer made a mistake. She thought that they were having a meeting that was timely noticed. It was within the 24 hours that the notice actually made it to the town clerk's office for various reasons articulated at the meeting. And as soon as she realized that was the case, she immediately sought to take all steps she possibly could to correct it. She scheduled a new meeting. She acknowledged the error at that new meeting. She indicated that all actions they took were null and void, and she adopted the exact same statement. The commission adopted the exact same statement at the new meeting. So everything she possibly could have done to correct the matter was corrected. The complaint asked that actions be declared null and void. The that's sort of moot. They've already indicated that the actions didn't count, and they redid everything, and it was all redone before the Zoning Commission actually acted on Mr. Carr's application. So by the time the Zoning Commission acted, everything was procedurally proper, and the right statements were before the Zoning Commission. So based on that, I just ask that the well-reasoned decision of the hearing officer be adopted by the commission.
Thank you.
Commissioners,
is there any other questions? Anything further?
I would just say that the fact that I think it is within your jurisdiction and within the scope of this to recognize that her statements to the Planning and Zoning Commission regarding the legality of this meeting were inaccurate and were never corrected to the Planning and Zoning Commission. And that is fundamentally the cause for this complaint.
Thank you. I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move the adoption of the office.
Mr. Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none.
Discussion?
Yes.
Just to between its mention about the amendment, I mean, I feel like it's a very small, minor amendment. It's a request he's making. I don't see why we can't amend the words. It's something that is helpful to him and whatever he's using it for, just so it's not confusing.
So, Mr. Chairman, that's why I came up to recommend that. This is Attorney Harmon. I was the hearing officer. I referred to the filing that the complainant made as a special permit application because I think that's how it was referred to. But if it should be referred to as an amendment application in paragraph 616, 17 and footnote 1, I would say that it would be okay to change that if the commission wanted to change special permit application to amendment application. That makes it more precise.
I'm just curious, counsel. Most towns have both a planning and zoning commissioner or zoning commission and a zoning board of appeals. In Ridgefield, who does special permit applications? Who handles those? What board?
Pretty sure it would be P&Z.
The what?
Planning and zoning.
Planning and zoning. Yeah. Planning and zoning commission does that. And who handles amendments to the zoning regs? Same commission?
It would be planning and zoning.
Same one? Okay. Whatever it is, town's different. I don't know. Okay.
That's my understanding. That's not something I was, you know,
A lot of towns, the special permit applications would be done by a zoning board of appeals. But I don't know anything about Ridgefield, so I'm just curious.
Yeah. So, I mean, in this case, I don't have the application with me. I'm not sure what it's called. And we would have no objection to how it's characterized in the report. I don't think it goes to the substantive
points
of the commission.
We have a motion and a second, and then there's discussion. And during the discussion, there was a request to amend. We have to have a motion withdrawn and a second withdrawn.
Was the first motion?
Motion was to
adopt.
Without an amendment.
Yes. Why don't we do? Why don't we do it that way?
Okay.
To withdraw.
I'll withdraw my motion.
Draw second.
Okay. And so now, Commissioner Goldsby.
Okay. Commissioner Goldsby, I move that we amend the hearing officer's report for paragraph 6, 16, 17, and footnote 1 on page 4 to change special permit application to amend.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded to amend. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of the amendment only. Commissioner Ainsworth?
Yeah, yes.
Mr. Fusashi?
Yes.
Mr. Goldsby?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Olenegan, yes. The amendment passes unanimously.
You know that was the right decision because Attorney Harmon smiled. I was uncertain what the wording changed.
I was just smiling because you were voting on it.
And two smiles at the same time. So I assume we did the right thing.
So I just have one question of Mr. Carr. So the in paragraph 60, it mentions that the special meeting was held at August 16th at 8 a.m.?
That's correct.
So that's why it was not within the 24 hours.
If you read the whole thing, there was a
a notice sent to the town clerk, but it had the wrong date on it. Yeah, August 25th.
I was just saying, because if they fixed it at 8:30 a.m. on the 15th, it was not.
It was not within the, it was at 3:50 something on the 15th that they got the corrected. And it was the first.
I'm just going back to paragraph 12 where it says it was stamped in the office of the town clerk at, when they reopened at 8:30 a.m. on the 15th.
That was the one that had the wrong date on it. And then they corrected it. And they also had not in that original one, and they had not included information on how the public could dial into it. And the subsequent one at 3:50, whatever, 3:53 on the 15th, they did include that information, but they couldn't really post it properly. So when this came to the Planning and Zoning Commission, I was completely surprised that they had had a meeting and voted on it. And I think that's the objective. That is the objective.
You answered my question.
Right, but that's the objective of the Freedom of Information Act, so that people aren't surprised by that kind of thing.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Schreier, I'll move adoption of the amended hearing officer.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there a discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of the amended hearing officer's report. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fuzeshi?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Chairman Owen Agin, yes. Passes unanimously.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you, Attorney Harmon. Great job.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, I think that brings us to items 4, 5, and 6, each of which are seeking your approval to deny leave to schedule hearings in these matters. So the first two, 4 and 5, involve the same complainant, Eric von Tyus versus James Rovella. And the first one is docket number FIC 2022-0303. The second one, again, it's the same complainant, Eric von Tyus versus Peter Reichard, Chief Police Department, City of New London. And that's docket number 2022-0304. So for the reason that each of these, I believe, would constitute an abuse of our process pursuant to 1-206B2, I would ask that you do not allow these matters to proceed to a hearing. Mr. Tyus has filed, as you'll see in the paperwork, at least at the time of that preparation of the paperwork, 110 complaints, many of which, I think I wrote down 40, were against the police department, and they're all very similar. They relate to records concerning his 2006 arrest and conviction. The commission has already heard cases very similar to this before, and I don't think it would be worthwhile to hold hearings on them again. So for that reason, with respect to both items 4 and 5, involving 2022-0303 and 2022-0304, I ask you to affirm my decision to deny leave to schedule a hearing.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Strader, I move that we affirm the executive director's decision to or request to summarily deny leave in the two cases regarding Mr. Jawan Tyus, dockets FIC 2022-0303 and 2022-0304.
This is Commissioner
Hankins,
second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Goldsby?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously.
Okay, thank you. And then for 6, same process, but slightly different reason. This one is based on jurisdiction, really. This one is Marley Rudko versus First Selectman Town of Colchester and Town of Colchester, docket number 2022-0307. So this complaint involves a municipal agency, and the allegation involves the allegation is that there were no postings on
a municipal website, I guess within Colchester, and that is not a requirement under the FOI Act for municipal agencies to do that. So I don't think we need to have a hearing along those lines. So similar process, as I said, but slightly different reason, a lack of jurisdiction. So I'd ask you to affirm my decision not to schedule a hearing in this matter, 2022-0307.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, in the case of agenda item 6, I move that we affirm the decision and request of the executive director and general counsel to deny leave to schedule hearings in the case of Marley Rudko versus First Electman Town of Colchester, docket FIC 2022-0307.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing done, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Gizeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Goldsby?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, all
yes.
in. Yes. Passes unanimously.
Thank you. We'll move on to item 7. Attorney Harmon is back.
You've been at that many times today. Like on utility infield.
Every time she comes up, there's like, no.
So I have to report on two new appeals filed by the City of Bridgeport. These appeals have to do with docket number 2022-0182 and 2022-0183. It's basically the same request. It's by the Innocence Project attorney. She wants records related to the homicide of a particular person and then records related to her client from a certain date frame regarding any arrests, search warrants, police contacts made during that period with her client. The homicide records are incorporated into the request for records about her client. The case, you know, the appeal argues, the commission found some records were exempt. Some of the exemptions claimed the identity of minor witnesses, erased records. But mostly found that the records were not erased in order disclosure. The appeal in standard form argues that this is new, I think, the commission didn't have jurisdiction to hear the case because the complaint wasn't filed within 30 days. The hearing officer does the analysis and determines that, you know, after 4 business days, the request has to be complied with or denied, and if not, that starts the 30-day clock. So found that the commission had jurisdiction. The respondents argue that the commission lacked jurisdiction to consider the issue of exemptions because it was not, you know, fairly raised in the complaint. The hearing officer, you know, looked at that and found that it does a good analysis of what a complaint to the commission means when records are not disclosed. And then the respondents argue that the commission didn't credit the testimony with regard to certain exemptions that the commission found they failed to prove. You know, it's standard Bridgeport appeal. It's interesting the cases they choose to appeal, but I think the two will probably be consolidated for briefing and argument because they really are the same request, basically. So that's all we have. 2 more Bridgeport cases.
That makes 4.
That makes 4. That makes 4 pending right now.
Yeah, in this year.
Yeah.
Can I make a small question? Would it be possible I know you've done so much today, just to add a little more to you. Can we do a one-page, one-paragraph summary of the 4 Bridgeport pending cases, just so,
Okay, so the
just so that, you know, one can absorb they relate to her.
So these two are a little bit different, because that argument about the complaint not being filed within 30 days is new, but the rest of it is pretty standard stuff. The other one that's pending has to do with the other one that is pending that was appealed. Attorney Schwind was the hearing officer, and it was one of those cases that was not under a statute of limitations. So they had, I think, approximately 3,000 days
by the time the commission, you know, got the case before it, and the records had not been disclosed at all. In addition, in that case, between the issuance of the hearing officer's report, where the hearing officer found that they didn't prove any of the exemptions, before the commission got to consider that hearing officer's report, 175 days went by. So this is a case where Bridgeport had a total of 3 years and 9 days from, and nothing had been disclosed by the time the commission considered the report. The second report that is pending is a different kind of appeal where the commission found that the evidence that was put forward on certain exemptions was insufficient. So in that regard, the second one is similar to parts of the Johanna Fay reports that are here. And then these two say that the complaint wasn't filed within 30 days, that we couldn't consider the exemptions like in one that's pending, and then that we didn't credit. So it's really just one additional argument, which would be the filing within 30 days. So it's interesting. We'll see what the court does with the first two, and maybe we can hold back on these two and let those two be decided, because I think many of the issues in here, if the other two go forward, could be resolved.
Thanks. I was just trying to organize my mind.
Yeah, me too.
How they relate to what's happening. But that was very helpful.
Sure.
You get the writing part for now.
I don't think you have to come back.
Okay. Thank you.
Very, very much. Good job.
3,000 days.
It takes 3,000 days to get off their voter roll.
3 years, 9 days. In my head, it's
3,000. Okay, so items 8 and 9, I'll just kind of collapse the two just to talk about staff very briefly. We did extend an offer that it was accepted to an attorney for to fill our attorney position, Attorney Nicholas. He goes by Nick Samara, and he'll be joining us at the end of June. June 30th is his start date, so we're moving people around again to try to fit him into our office.
So where did he come from?
Good news. He works at a firm right now that's in, it's over the New York line. It's, you know, if you're going down 84, it's like just after you cross over into New York. It's somewhere in that vicinity. He's been working at that firm for a few years. He also clerked at the appellate court, I believe. And
Connecticut appellate court?
Yes. Okay. So we're excited about that. We also are in the process of doing the interviews for our secretary position, and also the managing director position closed, and we will be doing at least one interview for that position and hope to fill that one soon. I think that's it on the legislature. I guess we can move into the legislative report to just report that the legislature did approve two new positions for the commission. One will be a staff attorney and the other will be an administrative assistant. So we did get those positions. There will be more of us soon. And so with that, maybe...
Plunk pads or...
Yeah. That's a good point. Working on it. Working on it, yes. So
question is, which is the seniority position?
Right. Bottom bunk preferred or the top bunk?
I don't know.
So under our legislative report, Paula, do you want to report or do... What would the commission like? Successful session.
Yeah, I'll keep it brief. I know it's late. I think overall it was a successful session. We were able to defend a lot of the bills that would have had negative impacts on FOI. Unfortunately, I guess I'll sit just for 2 seconds. unfortunately, the proposals that the commission put forward, the same ones that we put in last year that made it out of committee, but didn't go anywhere. One of the, I guess, on the positive side, the fines, the one that increases the commission's authority to impose additional fines and also to seek additional remedies in court, that passed. I would say at this point, the the one that
it went to 5,000.
It went to 5,000. From 1,000 to 5,000, so the commission could do that. And then I guess on the negative side, the proposal to broaden the application, the exemption dealing with records of whistleblower complaints was passed, so that now the exemption doesn't only apply to the identity of the whistleblower and records investigation, it also exempts from disclosure complaints, whistleblower complaints. So that passed unanimously in the Senate, and 90-something to 55.
50-something, yes.
Yeah, 50-something in the House. So, but overall, given the number of bills that we were defending against, I think it was a successful session.
What's the theory behind not allowing the whistleblower complaints?
There were several arguments put forward by the auditors. One of them was that it makes it more difficult to investigate the whistleblower, to do investigations if the whistleblower's the whistleblower complaints were disclosed, even in redacted form. Also, it would increase the number of anonymous complaints, which is make it more difficult. The commission in one of the decisions that you made issued last year, there was a footnote. You did find the complaint exempt from disclosure in its entirety based on the fact that you couldn't redact the complaint in such a way that it wouldn't reveal the identity of the whistleblower. But there was sort of a footnote put in there that it should be done on case-by-case basis. And the auditors really feel like it should just be completely exempt from disclosure. They also relied on an attorney general's opinion that was issued several years back, in which the AG opined that complaints were part of the records of the investigation, which the commission, took a different opinion. So,
I just want to quick. What happened to the university exemption? The university.
That one, unfortunately.
That did pass, right?
That did not pass.
Did not pass.
Okay. It did not.
Did you just say that again?
Yes.
Did not pass.
Did not. It passed. I'll correct it.
It's not law. Today it's not.
It is not law, and at least this year won't be law. So it passed the Senate,
but it's not.
It was never taken
in the House.
Good. Correct.
Thank you.
What about teaching vaping? Are we doing that
now? Apparently, I think we're required to do so. So hopefully we won't have a request. Tom and Russell may, get a request to teach on. There's the provision that under the same provision that requires the commission to conduct training on FOI and access to public records and meetings. It was amended at some point, and we're not quite sure how it got into that statute that requires us to train on vaping and smoking in public buildings. And for a few years now, we have been trying to
going there and saying, "Can you remove that requirement?"
Champion that cause.
No, we really it hasn't been an issue, but
it is a joke.
Well, certainly increase the number of people applying for that job.
It's the humor of the legislature.
Yeah. So, Paula will be preparing, a much more lengthy report, and we'll circulate that. And I do really want to thank our legislative team, great team that reviewed every bill throughout the session. It's a difficult add-on job for our lawyers, and they do it I was going to say willingly, but sort of willingly, and they do it really, really well.
Yes.
And a big shout out to Paula Perlman. I don't think you could have a better advocate.
Thank you, Paula. Thank you. Key applauses for this people on the phone.
So, okay, on that note, no new business.
I move adjourned.
Second.
through the list. We'll take a roll call of those in favor of adjourning. Was there a second?
Yeah, I seconded. You just saw another one.
We have everybody.
Mr. Streeter, yes.
Yep.
Everybody. Mr. Hankins, Commissioner Fusashi, and myself, all in even, yes.
Excellent.
We're adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you.
In the ring.
I'm in the smallest space.
Yeah,
I know. I stick by what I
think.
I'm not going to